over.
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
Holy crap, it's Nerd Pride Radio.
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
It's a place for all the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
Look, by definition, if I'm interested in it, then it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
I'm in love with a nerd.
Welcome to episode 2 of Nerd Pride Radio. The first prime number, the only even prime. So, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me. I am awesome. Today is a great day. My name is Mike, and you're listening to Nerd Pride Radio. Our sponsor this week is Weenie Hut Juniors. Come down every Sunday for Mega Weenie Monday. Our Mega Weenies are the weeniest. All right. Before we get to the main topic, I have to open up with a brand new segment, one that I am sure is going to be a recurring and long-running feature on this program, entitled Mike Was Wrong. Yeah, okay. I made a mistake. Last week, in the Pluto is Not a Planet segment, I talked about Kruthni, which is an asteroid that follows around in Earth's orbit, and I incorrectly reported last week that Kruthni travels around the Sun in Earth's orbit in kind of a horseshoe pattern, going all the way around the Sun, rebounding off of the Earth's gravitational field, and then traveling back the other way in a horseshoe pattern. Not at all true. I was working from memory from something I read 10 or 15 years ago, and as it turns out, what Kruthni actually does is, from Earth's perspective, it travels around the Sun in a bean-shaped spiral. So, is bean-shaped spiral cooler than a horseshoe? Probably. But I was incorrect. So, read up on Kruthni. It's actually pretty fascinating. And still, asteroid shares Earth's orbit around the Sun, is heavily influenced by Earth's gravity, dominated by Earth's gravity. So in that respect, at least, I was partially correct. I get 2 points for that. But enough about how wrong I am. We have a topic to discuss. So, this week on Nerd Pride Radio, we are talking about 1980s movie bullies. Because seriously, what good is a nerd in a movie without a bully to shove him around first and build up that determination and grit to fight back? Show him what he's made of. We need him. So, the 80s was absolutely rife with bullies. We've got a lot of great ones. I'm going to start right here at number 10.
Scott Farkas. What a rotten name.
Yellow eyes. I swear he had yellow eyes. Yeah, that's right. That was Scott Farkas, the bully from Christmas Story. Now, for those of you who didn't know me when I was a little kid, Peter Billingsley, the main character in A Christmas Story, looks exactly like I looked when I was that age. I mean, not just a slight resemblance, not just... No. Go look at my pictures, put them next to Peter Billingsley from A Christmas Story. Exactly. So, I loved this movie right from the start because I was in it. I mean, I had that blonde hair, that haircut, those glasses, the whole business. I did not have a Red Ryder BB gun, but, yeah, you can't have everything. Nowadays, Peter Billingsley and I look nothing alike. If you want to know what I look like nowadays, go check out Chuck Todd on MSNBC. Yeah, that's me, to a T, except I shaved off the goatee. But other than that, pretty darn close. But Scott Farkas is a classic old-school bully. I mean, if you've seen this movie... Scott is, and it is Scott, S-C-U-T. Scott is just pure mean for the sake of being mean. And he's great at it. And he has his own toady. Oh, how awesome is that? And not just, you know, not like a partner bully, like a true toady. Like a yeah, what he said guy. He's awesome. All right. And also in classic old school bully form, the minute anyone stands up to Scott, He folds like a house of cards, cries like a little baby. Ah, he is pathetic. So, Scott just barely makes it on this list at number 10, mostly because I look like Peter Billingsley.
Stick with your own kind, freak. Like that little tramp.
Alright, did you catch that one? Yeah, that was actually the bully, Mick McAllister, from the movie Teen Wolf.
Underneath all that hair, you're still a dork, Scott.
You're going, oh, yeah, I knew it was Teen Wolf. Yeah, I got that from the quote, but the guy's name was Mick? Really? Yeah, see, that's the one drawback. That's why this guy didn't make it up higher. I thought the bully here in Teen Wolf was pretty darn good. He was ballsy, all right? I mean, you're picking on a nerd, and that's awesome. That's what bullies do. And then it turns out the nerd is a werewolf. I mean, not just like a little bit, but like an honest-to-God werewolf. Now suddenly your bully is A, stronger than you, B, faster than you, cooler, more popular, does everything better than you, and yet, as a quality bully, you don't back down an inch. You're right in there calling him a freak to his face. Oh, that's so good. So, I mean, seriously, if I could have remembered this guy's name, he would have made it way higher on the list. I thought he was in fine form. But otherwise, I remember the one line from the movie about how, yeah, that was after I shot your mama with a shotgun. Yeah, see, I remembered that line and thinking, boy, you know, I don't know if I'd go mouthing off to a werewolf like that. But again, other than that, not much else about him was memorable. He was put in this movie for just that one little bit and didn't quite live up to his full bully potential. But man, for what he was in there, not bad at all.
Looks like you think you're a pretty good skier, huh, kid?
Well, I'm catching up pretty fast, I guess.
I've been skiing for 22 years. Think you can beat me?
No.
What's your name, hotshot?
Stan Marsh.
Stan Marsh? Stan Darsh is more like it. Darsh.
And that sound clip introduces us to our number 8 bully on this list. And you're thinking to yourself, but Mike, that's not an 80s movie. That's an episode of South Park. That's not even... No. That was the best clip I could find from the movie Better Off Dead. All right, so it's not actually from Better Off Dead. It really is an episode of South Park. But the Stan Darsh episode of South Park, which actually its actual title is Aspen, that episode sums up the main plot of Better Off Dead pretty darn well. And now, don't get me wrong, I love the movie Better Off Dead. John Cusack was awesome. The girl that played the little French chick that was his love interest, she was to die for. I was completely in love with her. A little sidetrack, in fact. When I was 15 years old, we lived in military housing, and we lived in a three-story duplex. This was old Revolutionary War housing built for commanders during the Revolutionary War. And in our three-story duplex, my brother and I lived up on the third floor in what used to be the servants' quarters. And on the other side of the duplex lived a family who had a daughter my age in my class who, I swear to God, absolute dead ringer for the chick from Better Off Dead. She was just cute as the dickens. I was totally in love with her. And, of course, being the nerd I was, never had the guts to actually speak to her. I mean, for 2 years, we walked out to the bus stop, waited for the bus together, and barely ever spoke to her, ever. Really a wasted opportunity. But that's beside the point. Getting to the movie Better Off Dead, again, here's like Mick McAllister. This guy only falls down on the list because he really wasn't the most interesting part of the film. The villain we're talking about, the character's name in the movie was Roy Stalin. He was the evil ski dude who gets to challenge our hero to a race for, I don't know, no good reason. And he gets to be mean in general. And he was a great bully. He did really well at what he did. But again, there were so many more interesting things in this movie. All right? Everything else in this movie that happened, the paper boy, sorry your mom caught on fire, Ricky. Actually, it was sorry your mom blew up, Ricky. There was so much funny stuff in this film that really, it felt like the whole ski bully plot was really kind of an add-on. So, darn it, the guy was good at what he did, but I just wish there had been more of him. That would have made him truly classic. But But now we move on to the real quality of this list.
Sweep the leg. No mercy.
Yeah, that's right. Sweep the leg, Johnny. Sweep the leg. Yeah, that was the evil head coach of Cobra Kai from The Karate Kid. All right. And I am actually giving this particular position, the number 7 spot on our list, goes to all of Cobra Kai, because they were terrible evil bullies led by the biggest, evilest bully of all. He was awesome. But the real star of Cobra Kai was their starfighter, Johnny Lawrence, played by the absolute bully classic actor. He was actually classically trained as a Shakespearean bully. Very few people know that. William Zabka. All right, Billy Zabka was the blonde bully from Karate Kid. He was the blonde bully from Just One of the Guys. He was the blonde bully from Back to School. This guy made, very short, but made a career out of being that blonde bully. And in fact, when you see other blonde bullies, like the dude from Better Off Dead or some other movies, you're like, but that wasn't William Zabka? Those aren't the same guys? Are you serious? Yeah, William Zabka was the quintessential bully of the 80s. I mean, when you think bully, he is the first guy you think of. I almost named this the Sweep the Leg Johnny Memorial List, because William Zabka is that good at it. So wait a minute. If you were going to name the list after him, Mike, why isn't he number one? Wouldn't that make sense? And, in fact, I've got a guy at work who was just arguing with me this week that I really needed Billy Zabka as my number one bully of the 80s. But here's the problem. All right. By the end of the match, by the end of Karate Kid, what happens to Billy Zabka? What happens to star fighter, star karate expert Johnny Lawrence? Yeah, he turns into kind of a crybaby. His coach hangs tough. His coach does not give up for a second. All right, he sends him out there against an injured punk kid going, "Sweep the leg, Johnny." And what does Johnny do? "I don't know if I could do that." "Oh, yeah, whatever, you sis. Jeez. Get out there and break a dude's leg. You want to win, don't you? God, your intensity is for crap. All right, never mind. I was just about to break into Breakfast Club quotes, but we'll get to those soon enough. All right, but anyway, Billy Zabka, the Karate Kid, comes in as a solid number 7. Now, let's see if we can class this joint up a bit.
"You were nothing before you met me. You were playing Barbies with Betty Finn. You were a bluebird. You were a brownie. You were a Girl Scout cookie."
Yeah, that's right. It's Heathers. All right? Heathers is... The movie does not hold up well. All right? I will just tell you right now, I am not as in love with this movie as I was the first time I saw it. But the first time I saw it, this thing blew me away. It was so dark and so different. I had never, I saw it when I was 18. I had never seen anything like it before. I was just blown away. All right. If you haven't seen Heathers before, I highly recommend go check it out. You'll absolutely love it. Back when Winona Ryder was still cute and charming. This is a great, great movie. Back before, Christian Slater was a wife beater and all that. Allegedly. Was he a wife beater? Or was he the one that hit it? No. Never mind. I'm thinking of Batman who hit his mom. I can't. Yeah, it was Christian Slater who beat up his girlfriend. I'm pretty sure that was the charge. Anyway, the movie Heathers is awesome because it features girl bullies.
"Do I look like Mother Teresa? If I did, I probably wouldn't mind talking to the Geek Squad."
Well, that's great. You don't see that very often. Girl bullies are spectacular. In fact, not just one girl bully, but 3. And they're all named Heather. All right, you can't really count the last one. And I actually have their last names. Heather McNamara in this movie was really kind of the tag-along Heather. All right, she really, really didn't quite cut it. All right, but when we first meet the Heathers, the first one, Heather Chandler, all right, she was, that's the one you hear in those early quotes, she was incredible.
"Grow up, Heather. Bulimia is so 87.
And here's what makes girl bullies so spectacular, is they can be just as vicious and vindictive as the guys. In fact, I think even more so. I mean, come on. That was good dialogue there, right? Am I right? All right. But whereas the guys also spend a lot of their time trying to beat the crap out of the nerds or out of whoever they happen to be picking on for this movie. No, the girls are way too subtle for that. No, they hurt you spiritually. They hurt you emotionally. They make sure that you are wounded to the core, and they're good at what they do.
Did you have a brain tumor for breakfast?
I have nothing but praise for the Heathers as bullies. And the best part is that, this is spoiler alert, you haven't seen the movie, I can't do anything for you at this point, but after the first Heather dies, they bring in the second Heather. All right, this is Heather Duke, played by the way, Shannon Doherty. And if you're too young for that name to mean anything to you, God, I'm getting old. But second Heather was even bitchier. It was great.
Why are you such a mega bitch?
Because I can be.
That's right, because she can be. See how that works out? Oh, total tag team Heather bully action. You cannot go wrong with this stuff. So I am telling you. In fact, not just Heathers. All right, all 10 of the movies on this list. If you have not seen any of these 10 movies, honestly, go watch them. This is part of your nerd cultural heritage. You have got to see these films. This is what makes us who we are. You will be surprised at how many references. You know, seriously, for example, if you go watch Better Off Dead and then go back and watch that South Park episode that you've already seen a half dozen times anyway, suddenly all those references make sense. They're much funnier when they're in context. Trust me on this. So, oh, but we have a list going here. All right, so that was 10 through 6. Now we're ready to move on to number 5, the big guns.
Hello? Hello, anybody home? Oh. Think, McFly, right. Think!
Yeah, you knew this list wasn't going to be complete without Biff. Hello, McFly. Hello, anybody in there? Yeah, this is Back to the Future. Biff Tannen, I didn't even know he had a last name.
What are you looking at, butthead?
Biff was great. Again, classic old school style bully, because, you know, he's supposed to be bullying people in the 50s. And, great at what he does. And Biff gets to bully Marty McFly and his whole family in not one, not two, but three movies, jumping backwards and forwards in time to make sure he bullies people in every era. All right, if there's a McFly, Biff's there to bully him. All right, and also let's note that this is now the second Michael J. Fox movie to appear on this list. All right, he did Back to the Future in 1985, and then he did Teen Wolf from our number 9 slot. He had Teen Wolf in also 1985. Do you remember that? I mean, I remember seeing both of these movies. I did not realize that. Back to the Future came out in July. July, like, 1st. It came out for July 4th weekend, 1985. Teen Wolf was out 6 weeks later. Holy crap. I had no idea. I mean, just what a glut of Michael J. Fox on our TV, movie screens at that time. But see, also on television, because I couldn't miss a week of Family Ties, Michael J. Fox was everywhere. He was our nerd everyman, all right? He's a nerd made good. He was the cool nerd. And, of course, everywhere he went, he had a bully to take care of him. So it all worked out.
Hey, girls, where are you going?
Hey, come on, man, my brother gave me that.
Now you're giving it to me.
Give it to me! Come on, man! That's mine! You real asshole, you know that?
Ooh, your brother's not very polite, Eyeball.
Now, Christopher, I know you didn't mean to insult my friend.
I know he didn't mean to insult me. That's why I'm going to give him the opportunity of taking it back.
Oh!
Take it back.
Oh! Come on, man! Stop it! You're hurting him!
Bastard, let go, man!
Stop it, man!
Take it back,
cut it out!
Kid.
Oh. Cut it
take
out!
Take it back.
Okay, I take it back!
There. I feel a whole lot better about this. How about you?
See you later, girls.
Ooh, that was a long one. Did you recognize it? Do I need to give it away to you? Alright. That was Kiefer Sutherland playing Ace Merrill from the movie Stand By Me. Alright. And also, not just Ace, but also his crony, his sidekick, his own little toady, Eyeball. What a great name for a toady. Eyeball. That's awesome. Alright. And this, that clip, the reason I played the entire thing, I mean, I know it was a little bit long, But I ran the whole thing because the screaming little wussy through the middle of it, yeah, that's Will Wheaton. How cool is that? All right. Ace Merrill was spectacular as a bully because he was just cruel. Again, he's cruel, selfish, pure evil for its own sake. But also, I think, hands down, he has got to be the coolest person on this list. I mean, you know, bullies are bullies. They're all big, they're all tough, they're all mean, they do whatever they're going to do. But in general, at least with the guy bullies, the Heathers are sort of excluded from this one, at least with the guy bullies, they're usually portrayed as kind of on the dumb side, or at least buffoonish, clownish. I mean, that's part of the bully role, is you've got to be kind of this goon thug clown who comes in, and yes, he's mean, and he's tough, and he's scary, but we all recognize that he's basically just an idiot. He's basically misguided. And Ace is not that. Ace is, in addition to being a bully, he's a true villain. And I mean, he is just badass, and he is cool. All right? You watch this whole movie. I mean, all right, this was back in the days before people walked away from explosions without looking back. All right? Ace Merrill plays that fantastic game of chicken out on the highway, and he just has ice water in his veins. Yeah, that's right. They come inches away from death on the highway, and what does he do? Doesn't even break a sweat, doesn't even look over. He just takes a sip of his beer. Yeah, we won. That's cool. All right. So Ace Merrill gets props for being quality bully material. All right. But also for being Kiefer Sutherland, and cool. And by the way, being Kiefer Sutherland also means Canadian. You don't get much cooler than that. All right. But Ace is only number 4 on this list. Who could possibly be better than Ace Merrill? Well, let's find out.
I expected a little more from a varsity letterman. You're not fooling anybody, Bender. The next screw that falls out is going to be you.
Eat my shorts.
What was that?
Eat my shorts.
You just bought yourself another Saturday, mister.
Coming in at number 3, Principal Richard Vernon from The Breakfast Club. Oh, he is also special because he is the only adult on this list. In general, it was my rule that a bully really kind of has to be your own age. You know, if someone's going to bully you around like that, got to be your own age, close to it. Because, for example, and someone else pointed this out in an article I was reading, is that if you look at the movie Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Principal Rooney doesn't really qualify as a villain, or as a bully. He qualifies as a villain. Because he's not really, you know, he's much older, he's this authority figure that is trying to push Ferris around, but never quite gets to it, all right? Instead, he's a classic villain who is pursuing and trying to foil the plans of our hero. Not so with Richard Vernon, all right? You watch Stand By Me, and, by the way, Principal Vernon is played by the late, great Paul Gleason. Spectacular job in this role. The man is funny. He is talented. He is convincing. I love everything about this movie, but I especially love his role. I think he does a great job at it. And the reason I qualify him as a bully, even though he's an adult authority figure, is that he brings himself down to their level. All right, someone else highlighted this for me, that you watch this movie, and it becomes very clear very quickly that yes, the 5 of them are in detention. But guess what? Yeah, so's Dick. All right, Dick is stuck there all day, and he is just as bored as they are, just as anxious to find stuff to do to occupy his time, because he is stuck there all day babysitting these little brats. All right, so he's in the same boat as them. All right, and he brings himself down to their level in that final confrontation with Bender in the closet. All right, when they're facing off and he's daring him to, come on, hit me. Come on, hit me. I would love for you to hit me. Do it. All right, he's putting himself down on their level. He's treating them not, I mean, yes. See, and that's the thing. Because of his authority, because of his position, he knows he has the upper hand. Oh, yeah, yeah. I dare you to hit me. Yeah, that's a no-win situation for Bender. And Dick knows it, and he's using that to push him around and get the reaction he wants. All right? That is classic bully. I think this movie, the whole movie, look, if you're like me, if you grew up with this film, if you grew up back then, I had this movie memorized. I had to have seen it at least 15, 20 times. I know this movie still to this day. I can watch The Breakfast Club, and I can recite it beginning to end with the actors as they go, because that I it's in my heart. I know it. And I was amazed to find out that kids still do that. I had no idea. I thought this was a cultural phenomenon from my generation. But apparently, no, someone is still passing this on. Someone is still pointing this out to kids today. My oldest had a couple of friends over, this is a few months ago, and one of them brought with him The Breakfast Club. So, okay, well, I'll sit down and watch Breakfast Club together. That's great. So it wasn't even me bringing it up. I pride myself on trying to introduce my kids to their nerd cultural heritage, to these classics that I grew up with. And here's one I had just never gotten to. But one of his friends brings it over, brings it into his life for him. And as we're sitting there, the friend clearly has most of the good parts memorized. He's ready to recite them. I finally had to stop him because he's as annoying as I was at that age. It's like, dude, seriously. We will enjoy the movie more without you playing it, honestly. So, man, I was just, it warmed my heart to know that little piece of culture from my era. I mean, that was 1988? When did Breakfast Club come out? I've got it written down somewhere. That was 1985, all right? That was my high school era. These were, I was Anthony Michael Hall in this movie. I was Brian. That was me. And to know that has been passed on, that is still being used and shared, and it still has meaning to kids today, I find that amazing. I absolutely love it. So kudos to Paul Gleason for this role. Kudos to John Hughes for giving us all these teen angst movies of the 80s. And hey, kudos to The Breakfast Club. This is a great film and a great bully. All right, but on to number two.
Nerds!
Nerds!
Nerds! Nerds!
Well, you knew I couldn't finish out this list without bringing Revenge of the Nerds into it. I mean, seriously. All right, and again, this movie is chock full of bullies. There are so many bullies in this film. But the one that makes the list, the one that makes our number two slot, is Stan Gable, played by the classic Ted McGinley. All right, Stan Gable as the head of Alpha Beta. All right, the football quarterback, the leader of his fraternity. He was the consummate bully. He was great. And of course, there's Ogre in there. All right, and Ogre is great as the dumb buffoonish clown bully, because we need one of those, right? But Ogre, as much as I love him. In the first movie, Ogre loses points because, what was it, by the second movie, third movie? Ogres joined the nerds. Oh, I've always found out I was a nerd trapped in a jock's body. Oh, whatever, you little mince. I can't believe you just gave up like that. That is sad, all right? But not Stan Gable. You know why? Stan Gable is not just bullying nerds for fun, and let's all admit it is fun, but that's not why he does it, mostly. He is defending his way of life.
Times are changing, Betty. These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
If they win homecoming, they're going to take over the Greek Council.
We'll be up to our necks in nerd sh**.
See? It's right there in my intro. It's a way of life. I mean, you're not going to let these nerds take it away from you. This is a matter of principle for Stan Gable. All right? And he will not sit idly by while these nerds take away everything that he's worked for or inherited from his parents. All right? Oh, man. Now, I should give a qualifier here that I said earlier that you need to make sure you watch every movie on this list. But, boy, Revenge of the Nerds is one that... Man, you need a little guidance going into this one. At the time, when it first came out, could not stop laughing, thought this thing was hysterical. But, you know, 25 years later, the heroes really were into some bad stuff. They were not nice. This is not the appropriate way to handle your problems, children, I swear. Oh, man. But I'm not, you know what, I had a whole speech worked up, but I'm not going to go into all the evil, horrible things that were done in the name of justice in this movie. But I will say, I enjoyed Revenge of the Nerds when it came out. I've seen it again recently, and while it doesn't hold up in every aspect, I still get a laugh out of it. Maybe it's the nostalgia factor, maybe it's, I don't know. But I still love this movie. And Stan Gable is the number two bully on our list.
Why do you have to be such a wanker?
Because I get off on it.
About 2 weeks ago, when I first came up with the idea for doing a 1980s bullies top 10 list, I mentioned the idea to my brother, because we used to podcast together. We did a lot of top 10 lists, and I knew he would be jealous of this idea, because it's a darn good one. This is a fun one. And the first thing he said is, oh my God, you're going to have Chet on the list, right? Tell me you're going to have Chet. I'm like, have Chet? He tops the list, man.
Time to pay the fiddler.
All right, Chet Donnelly from the movie Weird Science. Chet Donnelly played by Bill Paxton. Bill Paxton at his finest. Oh, yeah, you can talk about Bill's later movies. No, they're nothing compared to Chet. He is spectacular, all right? Chet Donnelly is Wyatt's older brother in Weird Science, and he is the worst older brother you can imagine. He is... While being over-exaggerated, because it is a movie comedy, all right, and it is a movie about boys who bring their own magic genie to life, and it grants them wishes, and etc., etc. But despite all of that, the core of this bully-brother relationship is so true. I mean, it just feels real. Did you ever have a little brother that you could push around? Oh, this is so the stuff you would do. Maybe not to this extreme, but man, there's a soft spot in my heart for Chet, all right? Or maybe you have the older brother and you've been pushed around just like this. Oh, you will so relate, all right? I love Weird Science. I love this movie. It's one that I haven't shared with my kids yet. I keep meaning to. We're going to wind up getting it soon because I adore this movie. It's outrageous. Its basic premise is so off the wall. The resolutions that they come to at the end, even with all this bizarre magic that builds up to it, the resolution still feels weird. Yeah, like they wouldn't do that, really? And yet I don't care. I don't care. I love this film. And every single moment that Bill Paxton is on the screen as Chet, every moment is pure gold. I love this. Here, in fact, let me give you my absolute favorite line from him in the whole movie.
You're stewed, buttwad.
You're stewed, buttwad. Yeah, I don't know why I find that so funny. You're stewed, buttwad. That makes me laugh every time, and I have no idea why. Love this film. Chet is our number one bully for good reason. You cannot top this. Watch the movie. See that I'm right. This man is awesome. And, oh, let me back up just a moment. Because, again, some of the best bullies are ones who are completely unrepentant by the end of the film. All right? That's why Billy Zabka lost out. It's because, he softened up. That's why Ogre didn't get his own spot on this list. It's because, he completely turned tail. He completely joined the other team. All right? Chet is a complete unrepentant dog by the end of this film. All right? Wait. You've seen the movie and you're telling me I'm wrong? No. Sure, he apologizes at the end. He tries to make nice at the end. Yeah, but you know why? Because he thought he was going to get elephant testicles. That's why. Yeah, okay. The threat of physical deformity, yeah, that'll make me apologize. All right, but he didn't mean it. Chet's still sleaze. He's a slime ball, and we love him for it. Don't ever forget that. Chet Donnelly. Woo! But hey, let's do a little music here. And I am being completely unfair to you guys because last I checked, you cannot get this song anywhere. I mean, anywhere. This is a remake of Dolly Parton's song 9 to 5. It's done by a gal called Janie Porsche. I think this thing is absolutely beautiful. I picked it up on an obscure podcast. I wound up having to make my own cut of it to get this thing here. But I adore this song. I'll explain more in a minute. Wait. Let's wait till it gets to the good part, and then I'll tell.
Yeah, they've got you where they want you. There's a better life, and you think about it, don't you? It's a rich man's game. No matter what they call it, you spend your whole life putting money in his wallet. We rent little rooms that are too small to die in. If you measured out, really, they're too small to cry in. But we go on, and we just keep trying to squeeze all our tears within these walls. And all these walls will fall too someday, and we'll pack up our stuff in the usual way, and we'll head out to the subway and the pedway and the highway, and find the skyline has gone some suit and tie way, and rent a new room with a hardwood floor, and learn the new tune of a knock at a new front door, and scream out, I don't want to move anymore, and find new ways of putting all the things in the drawers, and I'll get that job that'll pay off my loan, and maybe this month they won't have to shut off my phone, and maybe slowly I'll learn to drown out the tone of everything inside me that tells me to roam, and I'll settle down. And I'll buy me a home made of footprints and paper and money and stone and deck chairs and carpets and speakerphones. None of that's gonna keep me from dying alone. So let's you and me, baby, ditch this 9-to-5 shit. I've got no money saved and don't know where to get it, but with your good looks and with my quick wit, I bet we'll get somewhere quick. In the same boat with a lot of your friends, waiting for the day your ship will come in, and the tide's gonna turn and it's all gonna roll your way. Working 9-to-5. What a way to make a living, barely getting by. It's all taken in, no good.
See, I mentioned last episode that I have a thing for cover songs. This is one of my absolute favorites. This has been in my top 10 favorite songs for, oh god, over a year now. I love listening to this thing. And every time, in that spoken part in the middle, every time it gets to that line about, none of that's going to keep me from dying alone. Every time I hear that, it gives me the chills. Every time. I mean, I can be driving, I can be working, I can be anywhere, and it gets to that line, I get the chills every single time. Completely caught me off guard the first time I heard it. I love this song. But as I was thinking about playing this music today, I realized that this was the song I wanted for today's show. But it got me to thinking about, there's two other cuts, that give me the chills every time I hear them. One is another song, all right, and you can hear that right now, and that's Teenage Dirtbag by Weedus, all right? Every time we get to the final verse of this song, all right, and how does she know who I am? Oh my god, every time I hear it, gives me chills. I love this song. There's something really primal about it, I relate. But again, let's not miss the good part.
It's prom night and I am lonely, lo and behold, she's walking over to me, this must be fake. My lip starts to shake. How does she know who I am? And why does she give a damn about?
She's sending out tickets to your maiden baby. Come with me Friday, don't say maybe. I'm just a teenage dirtbag baby like you.
So there you go. You got a twofer. You get two songs this week. And I adore both of them. Those are two of my favorite songs ever. But Mike, you said that there were three things that always give you the chills. What's the third one? Well, it's not actually a song, but it does lead into our next segment, new segment for the show, hopefully recurring every week, Badass Movie Quote of the Week. Yeah, I think I'm going to like this one. I told you I got a thing for movie quotes. I got to have a place to use them, so here it's going to be. This quote comes from, it's the famous speech from Henry V. But, and a lot of you are going to know it already. I don't care. Let me preface this for you, all right? this takes place, well, you know what, let's even back up before that. Let's back up a few hundred years and go back to the year 1066. All right, 1066, the last year that England was ever invaded, ever taken over by a foreign power. The Normans took over England in 1066, which, by the way, if you think about it, we're coming up in, what, 55 short years. They will come up on the 1,000th anniversary of the year 1066. You got to imagine there is going to be one hell of a party in Britain come that year. I don't know if I'll be alive to see it, but man, that's going to be a lot of beer. All right. But anyway, 1066, the Normans take over England. And what you wind up with is the Normans actually were a duchy. All right. It was the Norman Duke. He was a French duke. But now he is King of England. And so you have this situation where the King of England has land in France where he has to swear an oath of loyalty to the French king as a duke of the French king, which cheeses off the English something fierce, because he's our king. He is a sovereign king in his own right. He is the equal to the French king. Why should he have to bow down and swear loyalty to this man for those lands? He's obviously not swearing loyalty for all of England, but he is for Normandy, and that's just wrong. That's it seemed the English were completely and terribly insulted by all of this, all right? Whereas the French looked upon it as, why does the English king own French land? In fact, at one point, England owned more of France than France, all right? And even though technically they were swearing loyalty to the French king, he's still English, for God's sake, all right? So neither side was happy about this. Right, and then comes up to, the end of the Capetian line of French kings? I think it was the Capetians. I don't remember. But anyway, the king dies off. There's no obvious heir. And so now there's two competing houses, all right? The Valois dynasty, which was notably French, and the Plantagenet dynasty, which is the English, who both feel that they have a claim to the French throne. And thus begins the Hundred Years' War, which actually lasted more than 100 years and wasn't a single war. It was actually a series of conflicts, but all pertaining to this war of succession. All of them battles, disputes over who should sit on the French throne. Now we come down to the time of King Henry V, King Harry, all right? And Harry has decided that he's going to make a deal with the French. Essentially, he's going to marry the daughter of the French king, Catherine, I believe her name was. He's going to marry Catherine, and in exchange, they're going to pay him a dowry of 2 million crowns. And in exchange for all of that, he is going to give up all of his claim to French lands. All right, the French will get what they want. They'll have all of France to themselves, and he'll have 2 million crowns and a pretty new wife. As it turns out, the French come back with what they think is an eminently fair deal, and they say, all right, I tell you what, we'll give you Catherine, and we'll give you a dowry of 600,000 crowns. How's that? Not quite 2 million. We'll give you a third of what you're asking for, and we'll take back all of the lands, except you can keep this one little crappy part on the southern end, the one farthest away from England. We'll keep that, and we'll even Aquitaine. We'll even improve it a little bit for you. How's that? All right, the English are terribly insulted by this. I mean, here they were ready to settle this whole thing. They thought it was very fair, and this is just a slap in the face, all right? And by the time the story goes, and Harry all along wanted to just invade France and get it over with. But the nobles told him, no, we have to deal, you have to negotiate, please, we have to try. All right, but by the time this story gets back to England, that they refused and they came up with this insulting counteroffer, by the time the nobles in England actually hear about it, the story has grown over time to the point where, you know, the French practically spit on Harry as he got up there. They probably killed his dog at the same time. It was, you know, just egregious. So now they are more than happy. Yes, go ahead, King Henry. Go to war. You get your wish. So, Harry gets his crap together, gets his men in the boats, and sails them across the channel, and they land in France. And the campaign season begins, and you can only war for a certain amount of time because then winter sets in, and you got to hunker down. So they've got a few months to get this campaign going and start taking over some France. Right? Problem is, they lay siege to one town, and the thing takes forever. And then they finally get finished. They finally have captured this little town, and now the campaign season is almost over. There's really not much more time for war. So what are you going to do? All right, it's getting late. He can't go back to England after all of this. I mean, he argued and fought for how long to finally get them agreed to let him go invade. They spend all this money on an invasion, and he's going to come back and go, we got one little town on the coast. Is that good enough? Can we call it quits now? No. He is not going to go back with that. All right, not Harry. So he decides, it is now or never, do or die time. So he packs up what's left of his men, and he starts marching them up through Normandy, and he's going to take Calais. All right, that would be a huge prize. Calais is close to England, right across the channel, nice big port city. This is going to be the feather in his cap. This is going to be the jewel in his crown. He is ready to go. And sadly, all right, he is marching through Normandy, and he has maybe two-thirds of his men left from what he started with, and most of them are sick with dysentery, all right, which is a horrible way to die, crapping your guts out. All right, so they are sick, and they are on a forced march. They have just finished marching 250, 260 miles across Normandy, across the coast of France, and they come across a French army in Agincourt. This is the Battle of Agincourt. All right, so here, the French army is fresh, ready to go. I mean, yeah, they slept in late this morning. They had eggs for breakfast. They're ready for you, all right? They've got all their servants, all their fresh horses, all their clean, polished equipment. And the English, as I said, just marched. They finished marching 250 miles in under 2 weeks, I think. All right? They are dragged out. They are all sick with dysentery. All right, so diarrhea, vomiting, they're just not doing well. And the French have them grossly outnumbered. All right, so imagine that you're the English army at this point, and your king is late in the season. You don't even know if you're going to be able to accomplish anything. Your king has forced you up the coast to this point, and you wind up meeting in Agincourt, and you have, the English had, 5,000 archers. All right, 5,000 English longbowmen, which, that's an impressive number. And along with the 5,000 English bowmen, they also have 900 men-at-arms, so 900 fighting men on foot. So let's call it an even 6,000, plus associated servants and retainers and all this other garbage, but 6,000 fighting men. The French outnumbered them, by some reports, 7 to 1, 10 to 1, one report even said 30 to 1, although that's obvious garbage. More reasonable numbers, I mean, again, it depends on how you count men, it depends on how you count the servants, the squires, but the French had probably three times as many as the English, maybe up to five or six times as many as the English. They had a lot of dudes, okay? They had 2,000 or 3,000 of their own archers. They had 1,500 mounted cavalry. And when you say mounted cavalry, every cavalryman, all right, every mounted horseman has his own squire, his own page that travels with him, who is also mounted and armed and combat capable. All right, so 3,000 dudes on horses, you know, another 10,000 to 15,000 men-at-arms on foot, you know, a couple 3,000 archers. Huge. All right, so to recap, all right, it is a crappy October day. All right, it is cold. It is wet. The battlefield that we're about to fight on has turned completely and totally to mud. It is gross. All right, this is not prime fighting territory. All right, and we have 6,000 Englishmen versus 15,000 to 20,000 Frenchmen. They are outnumbered a good 3 to 1. All right, and the Frenchmen, like I say, they've got all the horses. They've got all the men-at-arms. And the French went into this thinking, well, you know, when they start counting soldiers, the French barely even count archers. Their archers weren't for crap. They didn't think much of them. So when you find out that the English only have 900 men-at-arms, oh, man, we could take that any day. All right? So this is the scene. It is October 25th was the day of the battle. All right? That is St. Crispin's Day. That is the Catholic feast day when they celebrate Crispin and Crispian, twin martyrs from, like, the 3rd century or something. And so the night before, October 24th, cold, wet, muddy October night, and King Henry, knowing that they are outnumbered 5-1, they thought it was even worse than that, knowing that we're tired, we're sick, and they outnumber us to 1,000,000-1 for all we know, this is the speech that Shakespeare, according to Shakespeare, these are the words Shakespeare puts in Henry's mouth to stir up his troops the night before this big battle.
Now, my fair cousin, if we are marked to die, we are enough to do our country loss. And if to live, the fewer men, the greater share of honor. God's will, I pray thee, wish not one man more. Rather, proclaim it, Westmoreland, through my host, that he which hath no stomach to this fight, let him depart. His passport shall be made, and crowns for convoy put into his purse. We would not die in that man's company that fears his fellowship to die with us. This day is called the Feast of Crispian. He that outlives this day and comes safe home will stand at tiptoe when this day is named, and rouse him at the name of Crispian. He that shall see this day and live old age will yearly, on the vigil, feast his neighbors and say, tomorrow is St. Crispin's. Then will he strip his sleeve and show his scars and say, these wounds I had on Crispin's day. Old men forget, yet all shall be forgot, but he'll remember with advantages what feats he did that day. Then shall our names, familiar in their mouths as household words, Harry the King, Bedford and Exeter, Warwick and Talbot, Salisbury and Gloucester, be in their flowing cups freshly remembered. This story shall the good man teach his son, and Crispin Crispian shall ne'er go by from this day to the ending of the world, but we in it shall be remembered. We few, we happy few, we band of brothers, for he today that sheds his blood with me shall be my brother. Be he ne'er so vile, this day shall gentle his condition. And gentlemen in England now abed shall think themselves accursed they were not here, and hold their manhoods cheap, whilst any speaks that fought with us upon St. Crispin's Day!
Oh, can you feel the goosebumps? Oh my God, if that does not stir your blood, then your soul is completely dead. All right. That was Kenneth Branagh performing the Band of Brothers speech from Shakespeare's Henry V in the 90s version of that movie. And in my opinion, this is why I wanted to open my badass movie quote of the week with that particular quote. That is my favorite movie quote of all time, my favorite quote from any form of literature. I think that is the most powerful use of the English language I have ever seen. I absolutely love that speech. I debated whether or not to run Kenneth Branagh's version here for the show, or to simply recite it myself, because personally, I am a way better actor than Kenneth Branagh, but I thought I'd give him a chance. It wasn't the greatest copy of that recording. It was a little staticky, a little poppy, but the power comes through, and Branagh is just spectacular. So that is our badass movie quote of the week. Now, to finish out the story, as it turns out, when the battle is over, the English casualties numbered somewhere around, I think, 120. I mean, it's like 116 or 125 or something like that, all right? They lost 120 guys. The French, oh, I don't know, 7,000, 8,000 men dead. Yeah, the way the field at Agincourt was laid out, they had this big muddy swath right down the middle of this field, and then it is lined with forest on either side. All right, so you've got this little choke point, and why the French would agree to fight there, they were just so cocky, so sure of themselves, that it's just foolishness when you look back on it. And essentially, you've got this choke point here where the French, while the French have a zillion guys behind them, they can't use them. They're forcing them all through this little narrow passageway where, you know, I mean, when I say narrow, you know, they could probably line up 100 guys across in it, but that means that the full weight of your force is stuck in the back. You can't move around to flank them. You can't get up behind them. You bring your pile driver wall down, and the English archers, these longbowmen, just cut them in half. All right, you talk about the Spartans, 300, the Battle of Thermopylae, and watching these 300 take down, you know, millions and millions of Persians and associated mercenaries. That's what this was like. All right, that movie version of 300, this was a real-life version of that as well. This was a vastly outnumbered British force, weak and sick and sure that they were going to lose, and yet they stood their ground and they wiped out the opposition. They just completely slaughtered them. The French brought out their own noblemen, not their king. Lord knows, on the English side, King Henry, and this was a point of pride for them, King Henry led his troops personally into battle. He was right there on the field, fighting right alongside his men. The French king, not so much. We think he was a little touched in the head anyway. But many French noblemen came out. I mean, this was going to be easy. This was nothing. This was their chance at getting out on the field, getting a little bit of glory, and French noblemen were cut down left and right. This was huge. And so the French surrendered, and the English took the day, and this was a huge victory for the English. All right, Harry's shining moment in the sun. Spectacular. And you know what? We're running so long. I almost am ready to just end it right now, but I cannot let an episode go by without doing the Pod-O-Matic. Now, wait. Don't get too anxious. Before I break out R2, I gotta let you know that I busted open my trouble bubble and removed the original six-sided die that was in there, and I have replaced it with percentile dice. So I have two 10-sideds, one reading 0 up to 90, and the other one reading 0 through 9. So I can roll percentile, because my little chart of Pod-O-Matic topics that I've written up, I've only got like 37 of them now. All right, but I've laid them out percentile style, so I need some better dice to do that. I was able to fit them in, put R2 back in, and when I click it, hey, R2 is still making noise. So apparently I didn't break it too bad, but my little surgery has given us an improved Pod-O-Matic bubble. So let's find out what we're talking about today. Hot dog! All right, the number is 24, and R2-D2 is standing up, and I believe he's disco dancing. So let's refer to the chart. And, all right, the topic for this week is, hey, Mike, why do you love Justin Timberlake so much? Yeah, that's right. See, I write all these myself, so you guys are going to have to start contributing. Wait, why do I love Justin Timberlake so much? The better question is, why don't you? Justin Timberlake is, all right, A, he's dreamy, all right? B, he's, you know what? I don't have to justify myself to you. All right? Justin Timberlake is just, he's just awesome. Do I overuse that word? But he is. I love Justin Timberlake. I don't even care about his music. I mean, I've listened to some of his songs, and he's got some good stuff. I mean, oh, wait, yeah, that's B. He brought sexy back. Okay? While musically, I could take him or leave him, doesn't make any difference to me. I think Justin Timberlake is just talented and charming and funny, and There is something, he has a charisma about him that whenever I see him on screen, I will watch him in anything. Justin Timberlake is just fun to watch. And where I first realized this was watching Saturday Night Live. You watch Justin on Saturday Night Live and he kills every time. All right, and this is kind of a barometer for me with stars. If you can make repeated appearances on Saturday Night Live and consistently be funny at it, that is huge points in my book, because there's something about that, because you have to get along well with the cast, you have to get along well with the writers, and you have to have that stage presence, that charisma, that personality, and comic timing, which is really difficult. And Justin Timberlake has it. He is so good on that show. He makes me laugh. I mean, he's shown up as a guest host how many times? He's shown up as a musical guest. He sometimes just drops by just to wear some stupid mascot costume and sing on a street corner. He just shows up for fun because he likes doing it so much. I have a lot of respect for that. All right, and it's not just Justin Timberlake. All right, there's also John Goodman has been a repeat guest on Saturday Night Live and been hysterical at it. And I love John Goodman for that. But even more than him, Alec Baldwin. Oh my God, Alec Baldwin has got to be the best Saturday Night Live guest ever. Oh wait, did I say ever? Oh, I forgot Christopher Walken. Oh, Christopher Walken rocks on that show. Every bit he does, and he seems, there's something about Christopher Walken. He seems so stilted on the show. He seems so unnatural in so many ways, and yet he kills every single time. It doesn't matter what part he's playing. He kills. Christopher Walken. All right, again, side note. I'm good at side notes. Have you seen the movie Suicide Kings? Oh, Christopher Walken, this is great. Christopher Walken spends 80% of this movie tied to a chair, all right? And even tied to a chair, unable to move, unable to do anything else, this man dominates this film. He outacts every other person in this movie. And there's still, you know, it's not an untalented cast, but Christopher Walken is so far out of their league, it is unreal. So, tied to a chair, he steals every single scene he's in because he is that good. Christopher Walken is just one of the most powerful actors of our day. All right, who else on Saturday Night Live? Tom Hanks. Back in the 80s, Tom Hanks was a regular guest on Saturday Night Live in the 80s, and just awesome. So, again, that's why I love Justin Timberlake so much. Because he's a performer, damn it. Alright? He's not just a pretty face, although he is a pretty face. Don't try and tell me he's not. Alright? But he is, like I say, there's something magnetic about the guy. I just like watching him. He's my official man crush, at least for now. So alright, but I wish we could break out R2 again, but we have really run long. We'll save R2 for next week. He'll come back. So in the meantime, if anyone wants to contribute, like I said, I have 37 items on my Podomatic list. In fact, well, 36 now, because I just used up Justin Timberlake. A sentence I don't get to say often enough in my life. So if anyone wants to add to my Podomatic list, go. So I would say send me an email, but really, email is not the best way to communicate with me. Go sign up for my forums, all right? Sign up for the Nerd Pride Radio forums. Log in, send me a private message on the forums, all right? Or if you want to just post it in the podcast forum section, I mean, you can post it out publicly, but a lot of these topics are way better if they're surprises and everyone doesn't know that they're on the list. So, you know, send me a private message, send me an email, let me know what you want to hear me talk about on the Podomatic. I will add it to the list. Whatever you give me, I will add it to the list, and if R2 chooses it, I will talk about it. That's what I do. Otherwise, this podcast is copyright 2011 by Nerd Pride Radio. If you want to get in touch with us, like I say, join the forums. Come to nerdprideradio.com/forums. Sign up. Come talk to me. All right? I read everything that's in there. Send me a message. If you really want to email me at mike@nerdprideradio.com. I check it every day, but again, not my most reliable form of communication. Also, if you haven't yet, head on over to Facebook and you can either, well, do a search for Nerd Pride Radio on Facebook and click the like button And I'm up to like 20 people who like me now, or like Nerd Pride Radio on Facebook. As soon as we get to 25, then I'll get to kick in the really cool URL, and then we'll just be facebook.com/nerdprideradio, and that'll be us. And that's how you'll find us on the web. Well, actually, you'll find us at nerdprideradio.com, but we'll also have a Facebook presence. So go in, like me, and that's our show. What's he that wishes so? My cousin Westmoreland? No, my fair cousin. If we are marked to die, we are now to do our country loss. And if to live, the fewer men, the greater share of honor. God's will, I pray thee, wish not one man more. By Jove, I am not covetous for gold, nor care I who doth feed upon my cost. It yearns me not if men my garments wear. Such outward things dwell not in my desires, but if it be a sin to covet honor, I am the most offending soul alive. No, faith, my cuz, wish not a man from England. God's peace, I would not lose so great an honor, as one man more methinks would share for me, for the best hope I have. Oh, do not wish one more. Rather, proclaim it, Westmoreland, through my host, that he which hath no stomach to this fight, let him depart. His passport shall be made, and crowns for convoy put into his purse. We would not die in that man's company that fears his fellowship to die with us. This day is called the Feast of Crispian. He that outlives this day and comes safe home will stand a tiptoe when this day is named, and rouse him at the name of Crispian. He that shall live this day and see old age will yearly on the vigil feast his neighbors and say, tomorrow is Saint Crispian. And he will strip his sleeve and show his scars and say, these wounds I had on Crispin's day. Oh, old men forget, yet all shall be forgotten. He'll remember with advantages what feats he did that day. And then our names, familiar in his mouth as household words, Harry the King, Bedford and Exeter, Warwick and Talbot, Salisbury and Gloucester, be in their flowing cups freshly remembered. This story shall the good man teach his son. And Crispian shall ne'er go by from this day to the ending of the world, but we in it shall be remembered. We few, we happy few, we band of brothers. Oh, for he today that sheds his blood with me shall be my brother. Be he ne'er so vile, this day shall gentle his condition. And gentlemen in England now abed shall think themselves accursed they were not here, and hold their manhoods cheap, whilst Stinney speaks, that fought with us upon St. Crispin's Day.